This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We've got
Roland, and I work at Hares and Hyenas.
The first time was a month ago.
4 weeks ago, yes.
Four weeks ago. We're talking about Hares and Hyenas, which is downstairs here at the Pride Centre. It's like Harry Potter. He's under the staircase.
I can hear all those Joy people stamping their feet up the stairs. I basically know whose footsteps are whom's at the moment. I could say, oh, that's so-and-so.
All right. Well, you know, like, tell us if people weren't listening last month and what is Hares and Hyenas?
Well, Hares and Hyenas is a bookshop, a queer bookshop. We've been around since the very start of the 90s. We've been at the Pride Centre for 2.5 years. We cover everything from fiction to, God, I can't think of anything else, to biography, sexuality, kink, anything that would be of interest to queer people and those who love them.
Right, okay. Now, let's get stuck into some books today. What would you like to introduce for us today?
Well, my first book I'm very nervous about because it is, I think it's such a staggeringly good book that I don't know if I can give it the credit it is due, but I'll give it a try. It might even be my book of the year, but let's just say my book of the quarter for the moment. So Joelle Taylor is an English poet. She won the T.S. Eliot Award 2 years ago for her collection of poems called Kunto. And this is her first, she's also written plays, but this is her first novel, and it's called The Night Alphabet. So it's a book around storytelling, as I feel only poets can do. It has a beautiful use of language. It's set in the 23rd century, somewhere around there, but where tattoos have become animated into this 1990s retro tattoo parlour comes a woman who wants all her tattoos to be connected by a blood tattoo. So begins the story of a series of stories of the telling of the different tattoos on her body. They all deal with the way that sort of women and girls have to navigate a world that basically wasn't built for them, that's built for men. So the first story, which is set in 1911, she's also a bit of a time traveller, telling stories, she actually goes and becomes part of the people involved in that story. So the first story is set in 1911 about a family whose father dies. He's a miner in the coal mines in England, and the main character is the daughter, who takes on the persona of a boy, because even at that age, the girls are paid less than the boys when they're 6 or 7. So she becomes a boy miner who goes into the very small spaces in the mine. So we get that theme of everything is sort of centred around the men, and the women have to basically find their own way. The second story, which is what The Night Alphabet really comes into its own with, is about sex trafficking girls. I feel there's a way to write around horrific stories that a couple of especially women writers do very well. I think Carmen Machado in The Dream Life does wonderfully around the issues of partner violence. So some of those horrific stories that the horror of the event sometimes clouds how we analyse what's going on underneath. When we read a story about such horrific events, we just, you know, are shocked by the horror. But we really want to get to what goes on underneath. And in the night alphabet, the girls have been sex trafficked. They don't know that there's anyone else in the building that they're in. So the main character in that sees the men as mosquitoes, and that she's writing like in Braille on their backs to communicate with the other members, with the other girls in the brothel, I suppose. And it's just a staggeringly poetic story of empowerment, of the girls finding out that there's others there, and then how are we going to make our lives bearable and stuff. They're able to move out of their bodies because of the horror of the abuse, and so they can see it. They can see from above, and it's just looking at the world in such a different way. It's just, I'm staggered by the beauty of this book.
Wow.
There's other instances. Some sex workers whose pimp employs people on the estate, men on the estate, to make their life more difficult. And what they think is, what the girls or the women think is another team coming in to try and take over their area, is actually their own pimps trying to make them work harder, and they start up a vigilante group and go around throwing firebombs and Molotov cocktails at people and stuff. So,
right.
As I said, it's all couched in this beautifully framed story around the tattoos, and it brings in the main character's mother and grandmother. They start to explore the different realities between them, and look, as I said, I can't give it the full credit that it really needs. It's an amazing book.
Fantastic. Okay. What's it called again?
It's called The Night Alphabet by Joelle Taylor.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. And what else have you got?
My second book is Counting Lost Stars by Kim Van Alkemade. It's a dual story, and I'm a person who likes those dual stories where they, you don't know where the connection is until close to the end. I also started reading this book because I have a soft spot for punch cards. Anyone who's of a certain age will know about, might have even had the same experience as me of learning about computer science with the use of punch cards. So in 1972, I did computer science, and we had to use the punch cards. I'm sure most people know where you pull out holes to create the information. We had to send it off, and 3 weeks later, the punch cards would come back with an error. And so over 6 months, I didn't actually get to write a program because I don't think they'd completely sorted out how they were going to teach us computer science, but it did leave me with this love of those punch cards. But the first story is set during the Second World War in the Netherlands, where one of these punch card machines is used with the census, the Jewish census that the Nazis had just completed, to weed out various people and to sort of make lists of those that were going to be shipped to Auschwitz and Belsenberg and so that's the first story. The second story is set in the 60s when the cards were coming to be used commercially in the West, and the connection is between, well, the main character in the first story, they kept some of the cards as proof of the horrors of the Nazi regime, but when they were saved by the Americans, then no one knew what to do because no one knew what to do with the punch cards because the technology was so new. Very few people knew about it.
Isn't it a fascinating world, though? You know, like a punch card that we're talking about, and it's in this book.
A machine which is the forerunner of the modern computer, would go sort through all the punch cards, and various columns of the cards would be, you know, date of birth, Jewish, the name of the person, even their what work they did. And the Nazis also used them, because they could deal with so much information, they also used them for people that didn't declare that they were Jewish, but by taking what they saw as what we see as stereotypes, but they saw as, you know, ethnically appropriate things like the name, and their occupation, to find Jews that were hiding from them.
Right.
So I read once someone famous like Einstein or someone like that said that if the Nazis had the technology that we had now, they would have completely got rid of the Jewish race in Europe. And it's just, I mean, it's such a sobering thing to think that now we do have that technology. I mean, all it takes is that one person to use it.
Yeah, but look what's going on with some of these wars, though, as well. You know, like, you know, the Ukraine war and obviously what's going on in the Middle East as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. It's scary. And you know how much technology is being used in those instances.
Well, but that is the technology of, in a way, of blowing things up, whereas this is the technology of information, which is in some ways such a much more powerful thing.
Okay, and what's that book called?
That's called Counting Lost Stars.
Right.
I always feel nervous when I start reading a fiction around the Holocaust, but I think in this one it does it beautifully. There's this two fantastic lesbian stories that just... It's almost like lesbians saved the world from World War II, let us
right.
say. It's not, because I'm not giving any spoilers.
Right, okay. And you got one other?
I'll do a quick one.
Yep.
Appreciation is an Australian title that came out about a month ago. It's about an artist, Ollie Darling, who is in that mid-career mid-career crisis. He goes on television and starts... spouting all this controversial stuff that, I mean, it doesn't get him cancelled, but people lose interest in collecting him. So the book is basically looking, it's a satire around how much do we pay for art? How do we work out the value of art? And in many ways, the book is saying, since the 70s, art has been used as a laundering scheme by drug dealers, and that's where this huge surge in prices in the 70s and 80s came from. And it's a fascinating look. But for anyone, I mean, I'm not an artist, but I've that whole 70s and 80s punk scene, you know, Raw Studios and the setting up of Swinburne and all this, it has really hit at a core about what is an artist and what is their worth in the world.
Yeah, fascinating. But what's that one called?
That's called Appreciation by Liam Piper.
Right, okay. Thank you so much, Roland, for coming in today. And we'll see you in a month's time.
Sure.
Brilliant. You're on Joy 94.9. This is Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.